Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy Kay, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Friday, September 7th, 2018, and we are reading from the Big Book on page 107, the first full paragraph, which begins, "Under these conditions, we naturally made mistakes." We will read four paragraphs and comment on all four. Today's readers are C.J. H. on the 12 Steps, Julia E. on the 12 Traditions, and reading the text are Marilyn T. and Wendy M. The reference numbers for previous meetings are Thursday, September 6th, 10 a.m. The reference number is 11,885. And for this morning, September 7th at 7 a.m., the number is 11,888. And our newcomer greeter today is Melanie C. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask C.J. H. to read the 12 steps of OA. Press star 1 to unmute, C.J., please.
Ah, there we go. Can you hear me?
I can. Thanks.
Okay, so sorry. Okay, this is CJ, compulsive eater, currently in Arkansas. The 12 steps of OA. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I pass.
Thank you, C.J. H. And I will now ask Julia E. to read the 12 traditions of OA.
Thanks, Kathy. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to compulsive overeaters who still suffer. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia E. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two and now four paragraphs from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 107, the first full paragraph, and we will read through four paragraphs that ends... Today, most of our men are better husbands and fathers than ever before. And I'm going to ask Marilyn T. to please read for us. Press star 1, Marilyn.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm reading to myself.
Great. Thank you.
This is Marilyn T., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Northern California. Starting this reading. Under the conditions, we naturally made mistakes. Some of them rose out of ignorance of alcoholism. Some seemed dimly that we were dealing with sick men. Some sensed dimly that we were dealing with sick men. Had we fully understood the nature of the alcoholic's illness, we might have behaved differently. How could men who loved their wives and children be so unthinking, so callous, so cruel? There could be no love in such persons, we thought. And just as we were beginning convinced of their heartlessness, they would surprise us with fresh resolve and new attentions. For a while, they would be their old sweet selves, only to dash the new structure of affection to pieces once more. Asked why they commenced to drink again, they would reply with some silly excuse or none. It was so baffling, so heartbreaking. Could we have been so mistaken in the men we married? When drinking, they were strangers. Sometimes they were so inaccessible that it seemed as though a great wall had been built around them. And even if they did not love their families, how could they be so blind about themselves? What had become of their judgment, their common sense, their willpower? Why could they not see that drink meant ruin for them? Why was it that these dangers were pointed out, that they agreed and then got drunk again immediately? There are some of the questions here. These are some of the questions which race through the mind of every woman who has an alcoholic husband. We hope this book has answered some of them. Perhaps your husband has been living in that strange world of alcoholism where everything is distorted and exaggerated. You can see that he really does love you with his better self. Of course, there is such a thing as incompatibility, but in nearly every instance, the alcoholic only seems to be unloving and inconsiderate. It is usually because he is warped and sickened, and he says and does these appalling things. Today, most of our men are better husbands and fathers than before. Okay. So, again, Marilyn T., recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. When I look at this, I just, of course, it's about alcoholism, but, you know, I relate so much in having done the steps in the big book now on all of this. And, you know, there were times when totally inconsiderate of my family on so many levels. And I, in my disease, I was a rager. So I would yell at children, yell at who is now my ex-husband, and just blind fits of rage. This disease it steals your life, and when you're not looking, when you're not paying attention. And, you know, I can remember someone telling me something I've never forgotten. It's like once you say something, you can never take it back. People can forgive you, but they can't forget. But the damage is done, and you will spend, in recovery, you will spend the rest of your life trying to live a better example of what that that does, you know. Besides the budget, it's the emotional toll on your family. And that's what I feel they're talking about here, is the emotional toll and the repercussions of that. With that, I'm going to pass on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn T. Who would like to share on what we just read?
Donna B.
Kay.
Okay, Donna B. Melissa K. Did I get
Dana?
You right?
Dana K.
Oh, Dana K. Hi, Dana. Thank you.
Hi.
Who else?
Reggie O.
Reggie O. I have Donna B., Dana K., Reggie O. Who else?
CJH.
CJH. And I can take one or two more.
Kathleen O.
Kathleen O.
Rebecca T.
Sadaka T. Okay, let's start with these. Donna, please go ahead and share.
Hi. My name is Donna B. I don't know why I said O. From Denver, Colorado. And I wanted to share a story that in April of 2018, my children and I made a special treat for a Jewish holiday that we were preparing for. And we make this treat every year. It's become a tradition. And the kids went to bed, and my husband went to bed, and I stayed up that night. and went into the freezer and ate all of it. In the morning, I told my husband what I had done. And I said, should I tell the children, or should I just sneak out to the grocery store, buy the ingredients, and start from scratch? And he said to me, you have to tell the kids. So we sat down as a family, and I told the kids what had happened. And they said, you ate all of it? We didn't even think you ate sugar. So I did have to make a confession to my children that I was struggling, and that even after all these years, I had gotten into the sugar, and I asked for their help. So we cleaned out the entire kitchen of any sugar products that there were, and my husband, and it was warm by April, so my husband kept sugar products in his car that would not melt. So this is just an example of how my disease impacted my entire family. And as the weeks went by, my husband said to me, he said, I think I'm becoming a compulsive overeater because now when I drive home from work, I'm eating all the candy that's in my car. So as a family, I think in this case there was not rage or anger. We approached it very honestly and openly, but it still impacted all of us. It was very confusing to my children. And I'm very grateful to say that today, thank God, I'm not the sugar. That food doesn't call to me, and our pantries have been restored to life before my relapse. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Donna B. Dana K., please share with us.
Hi, good morning. This is Dana K., a recovered compulsive overeater from Missouri. Thank you, Kathy, for your service, and a very warm welcome to everyone on the phone, especially the newcomers and those coming back from relapse. We're so grateful you're here with us today. So this chapter, To the Wives, I am going to look at the sentence kind of halfway down our reading today that says, it was so baffling, so heartbreaking. And when I read this early this morning, I was just both humbled and convicted. Because I think what I'm sensing and seeing from the wife's perspective or the non-alcoholic's, you know, perspective with their addict husband, as the book talks about, or addict wife or sister, daughter, son, brother, you know, however that looks in the family, is just the devastation, the desperation that those who are not addicts experience when they love an alcoholic, or in my case, a compulsive overeater. You know, that desire they have to want to understand just the depth of the pain that addicts cause those that love them. And even to the point that this dear wife in here is questioning her own sanity about why she married this man. Could she be so wrong? And as a recovered addict myself, I mean, just wow, if I put myself in the shoes of this wife, you know, some of the other adjectives used to describe the addict here is, you know, unloving, inconsiderate, unthinking, callous, cruel, blind, a stranger. And boy, when I'm in the food, I don't see that about myself. And I also think, you know, well, I'm not an alcoholic. You know, this doesn't really apply to me because, you know, I'm not that bad. And actually, as I was, you know, the part that I wanted to say, as I was humbled this morning, you know, I was that bad. I didn't see what I couldn't see, yes, but I was devastating my family, my little kids, my teenagers, my husband all along, with not just the physical weight gain, but even more so, you know, like, you know, the stories that we all hear on the line, all the things that we've all done. And, you know, what an incredible confirmation for me to see today in these few words how grateful I am for a higher power that only by the grace of God, you know, each and every day working this program, working these steps, can I show my family, you know, as the Big Book talks about on, I think it's page 83 in the Into Action, it says, so we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. I have to have help each day to try to live loving and serving. And I don't know if you want to say, if I want to say making up for what I did, you know, all the times I wasn't available for my kids, all the times when I chose food over, you know, everybody else and everything else in the depth of my own heartlessness, you know, depths of my selfishness. So this morning, thank God, with his help, that I have put the food down for today, and it's just by his grace. And then I allow him to live through me today, to live this by showing others, you know, patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love, and letting God do the rest. So with that, I'm going to pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dana K. Reggie O., please share with us.
Hi, good morning. Is this Kathy leading?
Yes, it is.
Hi. Good morning, Kathy, and thanks so much for your service. And good morning, everybody. This is Reggio, grateful to recovered in the Los Angeles area. Boy, for some, I have some things underlined in these paragraphs, but I've been quite impacted by reading them this morning. You know, from two sides, like I look at that first line under the first sentence I had underlined was, had we fully understood the nature of the alcoholic illness, we might have behave differently. You know, and the first thing I thought about was all of the alcoholics that I have lived with or been close to, and just, you know, didn't I could see the dignity down underneath somewhere sometimes, you know, but it was like there was no understanding of the nature. And, you know, they've been through some pretty crazy times with alcoholics and the family. And the other part, you know, that where I just began to learn was I was doing an internship once, and a patient was an alcoholic, and I would sit and listen to her and leave the room feeling kind of crazy over and over and over again. And I finally came to realize that her thinking was so distorted that everything she said she believed to be true. So she was speaking it as if it were the truth, but I could see the falseness in it. But yet it was very crazy making, you know. And then But that was a big learning for me on the other side, you know, on my own side, you know, being the compulsive eater. It's amazing, you know, for a while, you know, they'd be their old sweet selves. Yeah, I could be sweet, I could be loving, I could be generous, I could be kind, until you got too close or it got to be too much in the day-to-day, you know. And then I it's amazing to me when I look back, the relationships that I had left, you know, really broken on a trail, because I had this amazing rage inside and never knew I was angry. I blamed and judged, you know, intimate people in my life for things that were going on, and, you know, for things that were wrong in me. But, you know, the other part of that is that I was like so unavailable. I was so emotionally unavailable, you know. Half the time I'd either be thinking about what was in the cabinet or what I could put in my pocket before I went to bed to eat, you know, or what I could get at the buffet that I was going to. But I couldn't maintain the love. I couldn't maintain the affection. I always went back to the craziness. But, you know, the truth is, I mean, I come more and more to understand, you know, that as it says in that first paragraph again, the alcoholic illness, we might have behaved differently. I'm still learning new layers of my own compulsive eating illness, and it is amazing to me, you know. Yeah, it's just amazing to me. So I've had this psychic change, and it's, you know, and it's continuing. Thank you, God, that it is continuing, because there's still things I need to learn about living closely with other people, living intimately, living graciously and generously, you know, rather than in that self-centered way, making sure that I'm taken care of. I've come a long way in that, but, you know, I still have some ways to go. And sometimes they were so inaccessible, it seemed as though a great wall had been built around them. I literally had a wall around my heart. You know, I could feel love inside, there was a lot of love outside coming through me, but it wasn't packed. It was impermeable in both directions, you know, from the inside out, from the outside in. I'm so grateful, so very grateful to read this, you know, being able to see and experience both sides of it and to just hear the amazing sharing and, yeah, for what Vision for You offers in this study. So thank you. I'll pass.
Thanks very much, Reggie O. CJ H., please share with us.
Hi, Kathy K. Thank you very much for your service. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
All right, great. Thank you. CJ H. here, grateful. Recovered by the grace of God one day at a time. And these pages, when I first came into the 12-step rooms, I read this chapter and, oh, you know, I wanted to say, who wrote this thing and who's this crazy, perverse person that thinks women are such, you know, piles of slavery and I just did not see anything good about this chapter whatsoever. And then with the patience and love of good sponsorship, I was able to work through those first 103 pages and start to look into these later chapters. And all of a sudden, after I had worked through the steps and finally came back and read this chapter again, I was completely and utterly blown away at what I heard and what I saw. This program works in my life one day at a time and slowly. And I have been in relapse and I've come out and I've gone back in and I've come out. But this program always gives me the hope that there is a solution. And I'm out of another relapse and feeling a great amount of peace. The obsession's been lifted and I'm working the steps again back into just the basic things that keep me out of this hopeless condition that the beginning of this chapter, these first pages talk about, you know, just the absolute devastation that my addictions and my addictive behaviors and my personality defects just tear through the lives of other people on a daily basis. And I can be like that sober and abstinent too. It's not necessarily, abstinence isn't a solution. It is a requirement. It's a tool. It's something I need in order to be able to work the steps, but it is definitely not the solution in itself, because I've been this crazy following a food plan. But I'm grateful for mine today because it does free me up, and I am of the type that needs to weigh and measure my life, and I work the steps around my food on a daily basis. You know, I inventory. I go to God in the morning now because I have this relationship because of these steps, and I say, please help me weigh and measure my life. Please help me follow these very simple directions and to not think of myself, you know. And I try and do what the book tells me and do what is suggested by a good sponsor. And it's miraculous how in just a few moments, really moments out of my life completely changes. And I no longer live in this. And we're about ready to go into these following pages that start to talk about the new attitude, you know, what things can look like, the hope of the steps and the principles, and trying to live them one day at a time. And I'm so very grateful and, no longer baffled or heartbroken. It is a good life. And thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, CJH. Kathleen O., please share with us.
Good morning, Kathy. This is Kathleen O., recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California, and happy to be here on the line with all of you live. So, you know, when I first read this chapter, just like so many people have said, I thought, oh, this doesn't apply to me at all. I'm not an alcoholic. I mean, I went to the book the first time thinking, I don't get this book. I'm not an alcoholic. Of course, not wanting to relate that any of it might apply to me. And I just love that we, you know, go through these paragraphs the way that we do, because now I can read this chapter and see myself all over it. You know, really this chapter is about the havoc we wreak on our families and those around us. And my family never knew when they were going to come home, whether I was going to be in a food fog, just kind of zoning out, or whether they're going to walk into a tornado. You know, with me being angry and annoyed and thinking all the problems were because they weren't doing this, they weren't doing that, and trying to control them, trying to control their lives. So there was a lot of frustration on, you know, people I worked with, people I lived with, you know, with my behavior. And I was truly in the disease. I didn't realize it. And when I was at disease, when I was experiencing dis-ease, I was in the disease. And, you know, today, the way that I know I'm living in a recovered life is I am not trying to control people around me. My family members are not getting frustrated with me. They're not getting resentments against me. And mostly it's because I'm not giving them any reason to. I'm not trying to tell them what to do. I'm not trying to tell them what they're doing wrong. I'm not trying to tell them what they should do right. I just, you know, keep my eyes on my own plate and do my best to be kind and loving and patient and tolerant. And, you know, if they're having some insane, crazy head moments, I don't need to react to it. And sometimes it's hard. It's very challenging. But I do my best just to keep quiet. Because if I keep quiet, it doesn't go anywhere. So I'm so grateful for everyone on the line and all your shares and all. It's been so helpful to me in so many ways and helped me to see, oh, yeah, that's me. And I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen O. And Sadaka T, please share with us. Press star one to unmute.
Oh, hi, it's Rebecca T.
Rebecca. I'm sorry.
Did you say Rebecca T?
Yes. Please go ahead.
Oh, okay. Central California, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Yeah, this chapter has so much to teach me. I know things come about when my higher power definitely wants me to see them. Yeah, you know, I'm still struggling with acceptance and with seeing my part, you know, in my relationship and really in all many facets of my life. But of course, the main one that's a constant and a daily and an hourly is with my husband. And I'm trying to just pray and be patient and I know that this struggle and this hurdle does have something to teach me. And I know it's about looking at myself and it's about looking at my part. Because all part of me does want to focus on what he is or what he isn't and what I have and what I don't have. And for sure, as long as I'm in that mode, I cannot find peace. I cannot be with my higher power. I can't feel love, you know, I feel, I become blocked off, and resistant or afraid. Thankfully today, I don't have to lash out anymore. Thankfully today, you know, I don't have to be in this feeling all day long. And through this walk and this new way of life and all of you awesome fellows, I can learn things and I can listen, and I can be patient, loving, and kind and tolerant to myself as well as this process and anyone else that comes in my way. So with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca T. I'm sorry I got your name a little mixed up, but glad you shared with us. Okay, I'm ready to take some more names of people who would like to share.
Shawnee B.
Sherry KB.
Okay, Shawnee B. Sherry KB.
Kathy JP.
Kathy.
Wendy.
I'm sorry, Kathy, who is that? Kathy Joe P, I think it was. And who came
Wait,
after?
Yeah.
Who came after Kathy Joe?
Wendy M.
Wendy M.
Ginger C.
Ginger C. Take one more, please.
Ashley G.
Ashley G. Okay, we'll see how far that takes us. Please share with us, Shawnee B.
Hi, thank you so much for your service. This is Shawnee B. I'm from Florida, grateful, recovered, compulsive eater. So I actually am kind of new to this meeting. I've been listening for a long time, but only today when I was actually listening to the reading, I was like, oh my God, like I would read it with my sponsor and I would hear it in other meetings, you know, the chapter to the wives. And I'd be like, this doesn't relate to my life. Like, I don't have this kind of havoc in my life. And then I'm married, thank God, 10 years. And I realized how up until now, my life has been like, whenever things don't go my way, I just start lashing out at my husband. And my coping mechanism was always, it's always his fault. No matter what happened, it was always his fault because I was so absorbed. And just listening through this meeting, I can think about, you know, like my kids, like just being so drained and not having the energy to deal with them due to this disease, which just overtakes you and just it's overwhelmed me for so much of my life. And so I'm blessed to have like three girls, but I think how blessed I am to now know that I have the opportunity to be the mother to them that they, you know, that they deserve, and to be the spouse to my husband. I mean, like nothing was his fault. And I always just, that was like my go-to. I just had no other coping mechanism to handle when things did not go my way, but they went God's way. And obviously I have so much growing to do. And I feel like I'm only like reaching this awareness, like right now in this moment, but it's definitely like, aha, like, wow, like I get what the big book is talking about and I get what it's saying. And that definitely brings tremendous relief. So thank you for letting me share, and have a blessed day.
Thank you so much, Shawnee B. Sherry KB, please share with us.
Good morning, Kathy. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Thank you so much for your service, Kathy, and everybody on the line, and welcome any newcomers. And, you know, I am loving being in this chapter because I used to read this chapter as if, of course, before I started doing the work this way, it was all about my husband, everything. I was like, oh, yeah, this is him, this is him, this is him. And, you know, I think I was born with a built-in forgetter that anything was my fault, and a built-in blamer that it was all his fault. And, you know, one of the things that I love, you know, is the set-aside prayer, and one of the reasons why I love it is because it is so powerful, but also I can fine-tune it to whatever's going on in my life. And what I think about is, you know, we say, please set aside everything I think I know about myself, my brokenness, my spiritual path in you. And I say for an open mind and an open heart, because my heart needs to stay open, because, you know, all along I have done a lot of internal blaming. I never said it was your fault, but I thought it inside. I ate it. I did rage inside with the food. I raged at my husband inside. I ate at him constantly, blamed him for everything. And, you know, didn't really got my part until I started doing the work this way. And what I also learned is that, you know, one of my parts was that I held on to so much and played judge and jury. Found that I was very judgmental of him, especially him. Anyone that was closest to me, I was judgmental of. And I wanted to fix him because, you know what, I didn't want to look at myself. I didn't want to look at my problems. I didn't want to look at what was wrong with me. I'd rather fix what was wrong with you. And also just that till I saw it this way and read it this way, it's helped me to have a lot more compassion. But, you know, what I learned is compassion had to start with myself first because I was so angry that I had this disease. And I didn't think I had a disease. I thought it was a moral issue. But, boy, I sure was trying to fix everybody around me that I cared about that was in my close family. And, you know, it was always about them. And also what I love about the set-aside prayer is I ask God to help me to see the truth. That's what I do ask. Please help me to see the truth. Help me to see them the way you see them, God, not the way I see them. And then one other thing I want to say was just that I have a once-only rule. I get to tell my husband something once. That's it. If I'm trying to say it again, I'm trying to control. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry KB. Kathy Jo P., please share with us. Press star one, Kathy, to unmute.
Good morning. This is Kathy Jo P., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minneapolis. Number one, I am married to an addict. And yes, it is very, or was very easy to paint him as the bad guy and think that he was the one. I'm going to tell you, shortly before I came to the vision meetings, we were in the middle of doing our taxes, and I showed up in a rampage at our lawyer accountant's office, bossing everyone around and calling the shots in the middle of a very messy tax situation, which I'm going to tell you, we ended up paying the IRS $90,000, if you want to guess how bad our audit was that we went through. And I thought it was all because of my husband, and it was all his fault. Our lawyer accountant called our bookkeeper and said, Kathy Jo is no longer allowed to come into our offices. And I remember thinking, well, he's the one that blah, blah, blah. And they're telling me that I can't come in? And I'm going to tell you, in spite of the things that my husband did in his addiction, he still treated people well. In fact, he still treated our children well. When I got off of sugar 6 years ago, we were seeing a therapist, and we continued to see her until I came to these rooms 2.5 years ago. And one session, he sat down on the couch and he said, the only reason I'm in this marriage is to protect the children from Kathy Jo. And he wasn't talking about physical abuse. He was talking about the rage, the anger, the shaming, the control, the bullying, all the ways that I showed up with my children. 2.5 months later, I wasn't even done with my fifth step. He sat down on the couch and he said, I am no longer in this relationship to protect the kids from Kathy. She has changed so much. And I'm going to tell you, that is the gift that comes from this program. And knowing, even owning. I remember when people would help me in the beginning and having me name the character defect. I am aggressive. I am abusive. Just saying those words are so freeing. And I'm in the middle of some hard work stuff right now that's affecting my sleep and my everything. I feel I'm struggling right now, to be honest. And I was going for a walk the other night with my husband, which literally we've done like one in the past 3 years. I asked him, do you want to walk around the lake with me? And he said, yes. And on the way to meet him, I needed to do a 10th step. And God told me, and I said to my guide, I'm actually going to share with my husband before I share with you, because I rarely share anything with my husband that's a struggle. And it felt like I was letting go of the bondage and jumping into intimacy with my husband. And again, I say that's another gift I get from this program. And I was willing to do it, and it was very hard, but I did it. And I'm so excited for the changes that are going to continue to happen in my relationship with my husband and my children primarily. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy Jo P. Wendy M., please share with us.
Yes, good morning. Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Grateful for the abstinence I have this morning. Thank you, Kathy K., for your service, everyone on the line. So I want to start with hope, because that's what I need to hear. So the hope is that God is vast, God is huge, and God's plans for me are way better than the plans I have right now in my mind, the plans I have that I'm believing about myself. So, you know, anything is possible, and all we need to do is lean in. And I think the other hope is that set-aside prayer, that we can set aside what we think we know for something that we can't know. You know, we can't know, but it will come. So I start with the hope because, to be perfectly honest, I am struggling. I'm going through a divorce, and I'm not a victim. I'm the one who asked for it. But I'm in the middle of this paragraph. I'm all over this paragraph, and I wish I could say, I'm good to go. You know, I'm good. I've got this. I've got relationships down. You know, I know all about peace and serenity. I don't. It turns out that I actually don't have that experience right now. And, you know, I am the tornado. Absolutely. I'm the person who is full of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, right? Like, for 5 minutes, I'm in that, like, higher, that they talk about that. I really do love him with my better self. You know, I pray every morning, please, dear God, show me my better self. Please, dear God, show me my higher self. Show me the 11-step prayer to love rather than be loved, to have compassion rather than to need that from another person. The truth of the matter is I'm in what feels like a lot of need, you know, and when that's the case, I'm in bondage to myself. And in that case, I'm trying to control others. You know, other people are going to fill this up, this insecurity that I'm having. And when I'm in that place, I wreak havoc. I'm all over those paragraphs, these paragraphs. I'm, you know, warped lives. My son, a few minutes ago, 13-year-old young boy said, Mom, you're always the victim, and I always have to take care of you. And I thought, ouch. And then I thought, yeah, I get it. I'm a little kid searching for my child to be my parent, or my boyfriend to be my parent, or my therapist, or whatever it is that can fill me up. You know, and today the difference is I know this. I'm awake, right? I'm recovered with regard to the food. The food is down. And relationships are up, right? And so what I know today is that I can wake up, go to God, and say, here are my defects, dear God. Take them. Take all of them, root and branch. Please, dear God, please take worry, insecurity, fear, control, anger, resentment. Please, dear God, they're up for me. They're all in my belly. And I ask you to, you know, take them, all of them. You know, and that's the best I got. And then there's the acceptance of all of them, because if I'm resisting all of that, I'm gonna they're gonna persist, and I'm gonna need to control my environment.
Time.
I need to control you. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Wendy M. We only have a minute or two, so Ashley, I'm sorry we won't have time to hear you. And Ginger, can you limit your share to 1.5 minutes? I'm sorry about that. Go ahead, Ginger.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Kathy, for your service this morning. This is Ginger C., recovered compulsive overeater. And I'm just going to focus on this one sentence. Had we fully understood the nature of the alcoholic illness, we might have behaved differently. So again, we didn't know what we didn't know. And as an addict, I'm a hostage taker. I didn't know about relations. I didn't know how to love and be in connection. My heart was pretty hardened. I had been hurt. And all I knew is you hurt me, I'm hurting you. And because of this practical program of action, you know, this is the gift. We get to have soft hearts and we get to be of maximum service a day at a time. Because again, as I share, so many are in the darkness. And God's light, if you're recovered, is shining through you. And it's bright.
I'm sorry, Ginger. We're going to have to stop. Can you wrap up?
Yep, absolutely. So yeah. Just don't let that light go out. And everyone have a wonderful weekend. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your share. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Wendy M., would you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Press star one.
Yes,
Wendy.
Again. Yes. Hi, Kathy. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your path. Hear freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.